Hello and welcome
to the Local Economic Development Podcast,
hosted by Sean Cunningham
and Joerg Meyer Stammer.
For other programs in this series,
please have a look at www.ledcast.net. In this episode, we want to talk about facilitation. We have been using that term quite a few times, and we have always emphasized that it's very important to have facilitation in LED. But I think we've never really explained what we mean with that term. So, Sean, why don't you start to explain what we mean with facilitation?
Jörg, I think firstly we must start off with a kind of facilitation that people often understand wrong, and that's facilitation fees,
yeah,
which is more like a bribe. So that is not the kind of facilitation you and I'm talking about.
Yeah, right. So facilitation is not somebody helping somebody else to acquire a submarine or something like that.
Well, that's maybe a kind of facilitation, but that's not the kind of facilitation we mean
exactly
when we talk about facilitation.
Okay.
There's another kind of facilitation, and that is the facilitation that people that are doing training often use to describe capacity building. So in that case, facilitation is used as to describe a knowledge transfer process in a training setting.
Okay.
And there's a third kind, and that is the kind of facilitation of an assisted thinking or exploration process.
Ah, that sounds very fancy.
Yes, and I thought you should maybe describe the German term that is often used, or the German meaning.
Yeah, and we don't have that term facilitation in as a word in German. So the word that we use in German is Moderation, which is moderation, the same word. And the term facilitator is translated into moderator. And that is the kind of person who stands in front of a group and the group wants to achieve something, such as run a nice quick brainstorming session or run a not-so-quick planning session. And the moderator or facilitator is the person that comes in to assist the group with that.
And then there's a slightly different use of facilitation that is related to the previous one mentioned. And this is not focused on a single event, but on a whole range of activities that involves improving the interaction and communication between stakeholders, linking ideas, connecting resources.
Mm-hmm.
And this is typically not bound to a single event, but could be running over weeks or months, or could simply be a kind of job.
Right.
So it's the previous one, just a bit stronger.
Yeah. Also, probably it would be a different role definition. I mean, the first role is the specialized facilitator, somebody you contract for one day to run one specific workshop because you want to have a neutral person but also a very skilled person, versus the second kind of profile where you have, for instance, your LED officer or somebody from local government or somebody from the local business chamber who is in charge of the overall LED process.
Yes. So in today's show, we'll be focusing mainly on the facilitation of an event or a specific meeting and the facilitation of a process.
Okay.
Or a whole variety of ongoing activities.
Right. Okay.
So let's quickly look at some of the roles of the facilitator, Jörg.
Yeah. Where should we start?
Well, I think that one of the first things that a facilitator must really believe is that the group of people in the room is the right group of people that can actually get to the right conclusions, or that can get to the right answers.
Right.
And this requires the facilitator to empower this group of people that's in the room to actually do some creative thinking together.
Right.
Which sometimes would require the facilitator to also take care about the preparation to make sure that you have more or less the right people in the room.
Okay. True. Yeah.
So maybe that's the first role.
Right. Now, how about the facilitator's role when you have a mixed group of people who do not necessarily like each other and who do not necessarily have a history of nice conversations? So what then?
I think in that case, the role of the facilitator is to create a safe thinking space where the different people can agree and where they can disagree.
Mm-hmm.
And where everybody can contribute without a fear that people will ridicule them, you know, for making a silly remark or for making a strange proposal.
So practically speaking, how do you do that?
One way to do that would be to regulate the inputs made by different people.
Okay.
And another way would be to make it very clear that all ideas count.
Yeah.
But there are also specific moderation techniques about using cards and making sure that all ideas are captured and that all these ideas are put visibly in front of everybody else. So you have to really concentrate on allowing people to make any kind of remark or any kind of idea.
Yeah. I mean, I've also often found that it was very important to say, to tell people, well, whatever card comes up, don't get up and start screaming immediately. Right, just look at it, and if you strongly object, just write a card where you say, I strongly object. But let's not get into a screaming contest right here and now.
I think also that when we work with groups, especially when we arrive from the outside as a facilitator, there's already been a history, there's already roles and positions.
Yes.
And we have to be very careful not to just reinforce those roles. So maybe the next role of the facilitator is to constantly provoke or stimulate new ideas.
Okay.
And then allow them to develop. And the role of the facilitator is to, if somebody comes up with an idea or a question, and three or four other people roll their eyes up into their heads, to say, well, let's just see where this takes us.
Yes.
And to maybe allow an idea to evolve a little bit before saying, okay, let's park this and get back to the main story.
Yeah, right.
So it's really important in this case for the facilitator to allow an exploration and to get people to be creative.
Yeah. Yeah. One of the things that I very much like to do is when I get the feeling that people are caught in a conversation that they have had very, very often, and where everybody is convinced that he or she is right, but they can't really get out of it and turn it into anything constructive. I like to come in with what I call counterfactual questions, where I ask a kind of question that sounds very, very weird, but actually takes people to reflect on their mindset, on their mental models. So, for instance, I recall that at one workshop we once had, we had a long discussion about how government can facilitate, no, sorry, not facilitate, how government can promote and support the private sector. And I said, well, why don't we just run a quick exercise where I ask the question, what can government do to make the life of business as complicated as possible? And then one of the participants said, ah, more of the same. And I said, yeah, okay. But still, let's look at this question seriously and let's have a couple of responses to that. And ultimately, the conclusion was, well, despite all its best intentions and the speeches the some ministers were giving, government was actually making the life of businesses very, very complicated. And that kind of challenged the discourse, the challenged the standard conversation of those people and took us into a much more constructive conversation.
Yes, you've done that a few times in workshops where I was part. And sometimes humor is also a way of reflecting on on some very obvious things. Although one must be careful not to insult people or you know, to be completely silly. I think that something else that the facilitator must do is to reflect on the learning and the progress of the discussion and to record this process visually. I think it's very important that a group of people must see that they have made progress on a topic.
Yeah, yeah.
But it is important that you caution and say that all your visualization techniques and the technology that you are using and your digital projector and cards and whichever methods you use are secondary to the process.
Mm.
It's supporting the process.
Right.
And that the focus of facilitation should be on the thinking and the interaction and not on the technology.
Yeah. One of the things that I often found very useful is that when you're using these visualization techniques, and maybe we should just mention that some people who listen to this who haven't seen this, just have a look at our website, mesopartner.com, because the whole website is organized in that way. And especially when you look at what we are doing around training, you see lots of photos that highlight what we mean when we talk about cards and communicating with cards. One of the things that I have often found is that this visualization also makes it much easier to get out of a dead-end street. So once you've facilitated the group into some kind of corner, or you have let them run into some kind of corner and they say, ah, this doesn't take us anywhere, you can just go to the visualization and say, okay, now where did we take the wrong turn? Let's get back to that point and take a different turn now. And doing that is so complicated when you have just an oral conversation, an oral discussion. But it's actually very simple and very straightforward if you have a visualized discussion.
I think that another thing about visualization is it allows the facilitator to be very creative.
Mm.
You know, I've learned from a friend, Natasha Walker, that to use colors and to sometimes be really creative in the way you set up the room,
yeah,
or in the visual aids that you use, you can actually stimulate people's thinking.
Yes.
But again, you must be careful in choosing the appropriate tools and technology for events.
Yeah, right.
Because we have also seen that people arrived with digital projectors and facilitation equipment in a rural village where most people are not really literate. And
right.
And everybody stares at the equipment and cannot actually concentrate on the process.
Yeah, right.
I think another, it's related to the previous point, but another role of the facilitator is to, at the end of the workshop or at the meeting, show the stakeholders how they have progressed and where this has taken them.
Mm-hmm.
Because that also builds social capital that we've discussed in an earlier episode.
Mm.
And it builds the confidence of stakeholders. Because I think one of our challenges, especially in the meetings that I'm constantly called in to facilitate, is that people are just tired of the usual same kind of meetings.
Yeah, right.
Maybe we should take a look at some of the things that sometimes goes wrong in facilitation.
Right, yeah.
Why don't you go first?
Well, one of the things that I'm actually quite often battling with when I find myself in this role of the facilitator is that I'm also the expert and actually have the role of the expert in different respects. Sometimes I'm the expert on methodologies, on how to do facilitation. Sometimes I'm also the expert on local economic development altogether, how to organize a local economic development process. And also sometimes I find myself in the role of a sector expert when I'm running a workshop in some industrial sector that I have known for a long time, and where I have acquired some expertise on the sector, so I can actually make at least a couple of smart-sounding statements about that sector. And that is something that I find very complicated, to make sure that I'm not confusing these roles and that I stick to either my facilitator role or move into this expert role.
I think it's very important in a situation like that to make the group understand when you are playing the role of the facilitator.
Yes.
And when you come in as the expert. So what I typically do when I'm confronted by that situation is I ask the group permission to come in as an expert. And you have to remember that you have to announce when you get out of the role of the expert.
Mm.
And maybe to elaborate further then to say that the risk that one always faces with this kind of thing is that the group then stop looking at each other and they all turn to you and they say, well,
yeah,
Mr. Expert, why don't you just tell us the answer?
Yeah, right.
Which then turns you into the trainer.
Yeah. Yeah, or the leader of the process.
Or the owner of the process, even worse.
Yeah, right. Yeah. I recall, I'm not quite sure where and when, but at some occasion I experienced a person who was literally wearing different hats, who was actually wearing a hat in his pocket. And when he changed the roles, he would actually put on the hat. And when he changed back to the original role, he would take off the hat.
Yes.
And I found that actually a very, very smart way of handling the situation.
There's some other tips also, and that is, one of them is that when you come in as the expert, go and sit at the level of the participants.
Yes.
So that you don't stand in front of them preaching.
Yes, right.
But that you become a normal participant in the group.
Right.
And what I often do in that case is I would ask somebody else to maybe do the visualization or the recording for that moment.
Yeah, right.
So that I can become a full group member. But then you have to exit out of that role again, back to your role as the facilitator.
Yeah, right.
You know, something that I've noticed very often in the facilitation training that we've been doing and supporting facilitators is that they get completely lost or trapped into a tool
yes.
or a specific method.
Yeah.
And they lose focus on the human element or on the people element and the learning, which basically means that they facilitate through asking a list of questions. And not facilitating a thinking process.
Yes.
So maybe the problem here is that people confuse the questions and collecting answers with stimulating thinking in a group of people.
Isn't that also something that has to do with the experience of the facilitator and the skills of the facilitator and the confidence?
I think that is the one thing. I think there's another thing, and that is that people often try to use participatory methods to collect data. So instead of running a proper quantitative survey with questionnaires and sample sizes and all of this, they try to collect the information in a workshop.
Yeah.
Which we refer to as harvesting. And this is not a good plan.
Well, it does work sometimes. I'm doing that quite often, actually.
Well, I don't think you can use a workshop as a complete substitute.
That's right.
But the point is that the purpose of the questions in the workshops that you and I'm running very often as facilitators is to stimulate thinking primarily and to collect information from the participants as a secondary objective. But a third reason why this could happen is simply because people just trust the tools too much.
Yeah, or are just married to one specific tool, which has worked quite often, and they are so confident that it's going to work under any circumstances with any kind of group, and then it doesn't, and then they are kind of lost.
So I think the tip there would be to keep your eye on the end goal, the end objective of the workshop.
Yeah.
And if your tool is suddenly not serving that objective anymore, you either have to go back a few steps or you have to consider gracefully changing your method from one to another.
Yeah. It's also one of the reasons why I personally don't like it so much when I'm facilitating a workshop just on my own without any co-facilitator, because when I have a co-facilitator and I get the feeling that things are not going very well, I can step back for a moment and reflect on it and try to come up with some different ideas, some different format, some different tool to apply. Whereas when I'm the only facilitator and I'm getting nervous because the thing is not going very well, then I often experience that I don't really have that kind of creativity and flexibility to respond to the group.
And then you hide behind a flip chart and you never come out again.
Well, I've never done that, but I've quite often seen other facilitators doing just that.
but maybe to explain to our listeners that when you and I'm facilitating together, the role division we typically have is that while the one is facilitating a specific activity or process, the other person is very focused on the group and collecting the cards and making sure that the environment is ready, that pens are ready, that everything is ready.
Yeah.
Because this also allows one person to focus on content and the other one on the setting.
Yeah, and also on body language. I mean, that is what this the second person typically would do, just to try to see how is the group going and how are people doing and are they still positive and all that.
Yes. I think there's another mistake that facilitators often make, and that is that they try to avoid conflict, controversy, or disagreement.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
So the moment they see there's two people frowning very seriously, they try to stop a specific line of thinking.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think that this is a grave mistake.
Yes.
It is I'm certainly not inviting open fights and arguments, especially if you're not comfortable with dealing with conflict. But I do think that sometimes disagreement and people stating what they mean or their positions is not a bad thing. It's sometimes a good thing as well.
Right. Yeah. I think again, it has a lot to do with the skills and the confidence of the facilitator and the experience of the facilitator. But also, I mean, this may now sound contradictory to what we just said about tools and not being married to tools. But of course, there are tools that you can use in that kind of situation. There are specific methods, especially in situations where you have grave conflicts. to actually unpack those conflicts and then to work on the different elements of a given conflict.
And I think, again, to come back to the role of the co-facilitator, what often happens in an event is that one of the participants engage, say, with me in a dialogue, and, you know, one responds and the person responds and you go backwards and forwards, and this is where you and I typically also allow the other person, the other co-facilitator, to come in, because sometimes that it's a little meaningless discussion going on, and for the second facilitator to come in and say, well, maybe you guys should discuss that in the coffee break, let's just quickly get back to the point that we were discussing, is a useful way of not getting trapped inside a discussion or a conflict, something controversial.
Yeah, exactly. So what we have been talking about now has had a very strong focus at one of the three types of facilitation that we mentioned at the beginning of this episode, namely facilitating a specific workshop, one event. On top of what we have said already, is there something that we should also mention, or something quick, brief, and focused that we can say about process facilitation? Kind of things that can go wrong in process facilitation, or some ideas, some observations on what a process facilitator should do?
Well, I think maybe the first comment is that while to facilitate a workshop takes a certain amount of technical skill and confidence, process facilitation comes natural to many people. So there are lots of people that are very natural at facilitating relationships, connecting people, mobilizing stakeholders, getting people to play slightly different roles. There's a lot of people that's doing that naturally. So maybe that's the first point.
And related to that, then the task of somebody like, for instance, a LED officer in local government, well, one of the tasks is to identify such people and to involve such people in the process, and to rely on their contacts and to rely on their ability to make contacts and to bring people together.
And to, again, as a facilitator, to try and create a platform where these different people with different opinions and different energies and different resources can work creatively together.
Yes, and ultimately what we're saying here is that being a facilitator in an LED process is very different from being somebody who's trying to control the LED process. So if you're facilitating, you are letting go to a certain extent.
You're letting go and you enabling.
Yes.
Okay, yes. I think that is a good distinction.
What else is something that a person who is tasked with facilitating an LED process can do very, very wrong? How about the usual suspect syndrome?
What do you mean by the usual suspect syndrome?
Well, there is this classical quote from the movie Casablanca, where at the end, the one guy shoots the other guy, and then the police officer says, well, to the other police guys, well, just go out and arrest the usual suspects. So that is where this term comes from. And what I've very often found in LED processes is that you have somebody who is tasked with facilitating the process, but he has or she has his or her network of contacts that he or she typically interacts with, and then pulls in those people rather than launching a rather broad-based process and trying to reach into different communities inside the local community.
Yes, I think that to build on what you've just said, that the role of the facilitator is to try and create new configurations, new thinking, new approaches. So a facilitator must really think more creatively than running meetings.
Right.
So maybe a next one would be something that often goes wrong is that chairing a meeting and facilitating a workshop is not the same.
That's right, yeah. Yes, exactly.
So I think that if you get to the point where you're constantly working with the same group of people on more or less the same topics, you're probably chairing a meeting and not facilitating anymore. I mean, meetings have their place, but on the topic of facilitation.
And maybe we can wrap up the conversation by quoting one of our close colleagues, Colin Mitchell, who always likes to talk about monkeys. Do you recall Colin's monkey metaphor?
But maybe you should explain.
Well, what Colin likes...
I do... I, I do remember the monkey metaphor.
What Colin likes to say is that when you are in a position of, say, an LED facilitator or an LED office official or something like that, there's all sorts of people who come to you and they have something that they want to hand over to you. And it's like if they had, as if they had a monkey sitting on their shoulder and they want to put the monkey onto your shoulder. And if you don't pay attention, if you're not very careful, you end up with lots and lots and lots of monkeys on your shoulder, which can be a rather uncomfortable experience. So rather than accepting those monkeys and putting them onto your shoulder, what you try to do is to tell this person where else to go and to highlight that there might actually be some other person who would be quite keen to adopt that monkey.
So to take that further, it means that at the end of a meeting, the facilitator must be very careful not to take all the activities and the tasks and the problems that were highlighted onto their shoulders.
And also when they're doing their work in their office and somebody comes there and says, look, can you help me with my business plan? They must say, no, but I know exactly who the three persons in our local economy are who could help you with your business plan. And let me point that out, and then you choose one of those guys that you find is the most competent one.
Okay, so that relates also to process facilitation, to make sure that you're connecting resources and energies and people.
Yes, exactly.
Okay, that makes sense.
Right. Maybe we should leave it at that for today.
I think that what we can do is on the website, maybe put on the LEDcast website, put one or two pictures of some of the methods that we use.
Oh, yes, I can do that, no problem. And I think what I can also do is to put in some references there to other websites that highlight methodologies, the kind of methodologies that we have been talking about today. So, people, don't trust too much in methodologies. Don't believe that one tool is going to solve all your problems. But still, you want to know about those tools. You want to know about some of those methodologies because it really helps you when you're standing in front of a group that stares at you in a slightly hostile way.
And don't let your methods and your tools distract from the real purpose of why everybody's in that room.
Exactly. Thank you very much for listening. And let me remind you that there is our website, www.ledcast.net. Cheers.
And we really appreciate all the comments and the ideas that you send us and that you post onto our website.
Thanks. Bye-bye.